This is Andreas Antonopoulos, and welcome to Unscripted, an audio-enhanced version of my most popular Unscripted Talks, where I explore Bitcoin and open blockchains at the intersection of technology, economics, and politics.
Caution. Unscripted is not for all audiences. Side effects may include loss of appetite due to a sudden and unexpected obsession with disruptive technology, and confusion about whether you understand how money really works. Job dissatisfaction and a desire for rebellion were reported. Entrepreneurial activity may occur upon standing. It may lower your ability to tolerate bankers and lead to contempt for all unearned authority, which could become permanent. If it gives you an irrational feeling of hope for the future of humanity, click subscribe immediately. Listener discretion is advised.
Andreas M. Antonopoulos is a technologist and serial entrepreneur who has become one of the most well-known and respected figures in Bitcoin. In Introduction to Bitcoin, Andreas delivers an entry-level talk about how he discovered Bitcoin, twice, in 2011, the second time around being consumed by a desire to learn more about this new form of network-centric currency and why it was so revolutionary, not only in the field of distributed systems, but also in the evolution of money. He explores various topics in economics, psychology, technology, and game theory with current events, personal anecdote, and historical precedent that will be explored further in future episodes. This talk took place on September 16, 2016 at Singularity University's Innovation Partnership Program Conference in California. It's currently his most popular talk on YouTube. This series is called Unscripted for a reason. All of Andreas's talks are performed without slides or notes. You can find corrections and clarifications in the podcast description.
And his newest book just came out 8 days ago called The Internet of Money, which is a masterpiece to read. Please help me welcome Andreas Antonopoulos.
Good morning, everyone. Let's start with a quick poll here. How many of you have used a digital currency like Bitcoin at least once? And how many of you own Bitcoin at this moment, or any other digital currency? Okay, we can fix that. If you like, later on today, come find me. I would be delighted to demonstrate to you how to set up a Bitcoin wallet on your smartphone. And I will give you your first fraction of a Bitcoin, not a whole Bitcoin, and show you how a transaction works. Because Bitcoin and the digital currency revolution it has started is best demonstrated and experienced than explained. It's actually very difficult to explain Bitcoin. I've spent the last 5 years learning how to explain Bitcoin. That is my full-time job. Unfortunately, the developers keep making new stuff, which I then have to explain all over again. So, for a moment, forget everything you think you know about Bitcoin. Forget everything you've heard about blockchain. And let's start from basics. In 2011, I heard about Bitcoin for the first time. And my reaction was exactly the same as the reaction of everybody else who heard about Bitcoin the first time, including its founder. And that reaction was, ha, nerd money. That's probably just for gambling. 6 months later, I heard about Bitcoin again. And this time, I read the white paper that launched this system. And my background in computer science and distributed systems allowed me to see behind the illusion of what I thought Bitcoin was, and it blew my mind. In my life, I have now had 6 occasions in which I have become absolutely obsessed with a system of technology to the point of forgetting to eat, forgetting to sleep, and consuming as much knowledge as I possibly can. my first computer when I was 10 years old, my first programming language experience, my first modem, my first access to the web, the first time I used the web browser, the first time I downloaded and installed the Linux operating system, and then Bitcoin. When I've discovered it, I spent 4 months consuming as much as I could, except food. I lost 26 pounds on the highly inadvisable diet of obsession. I have not emerged from that because I keep finding new layers of depth to understand this. And the reason it's so fascinating is because it isn't what it appears to be at first glance. Bitcoin isn't money. The blockchain isn't a system of currency. It is a platform of trust. It's not a company. It's not a product. It's not a service you sign up for. It's not a currency. Currency is just the first application. It is the concept of decentralization applied to the human communication of value. Because what is money? NQ told us it's an illusion. It's imaginary. And the reason we don't grasp that is because it's so deeply embedded in our civilization. Money is one of the oldest technologies that humanity has. It precedes writing. How do we know that? The very first samples of writing we have are spreadsheets. They are tallies and ledgers of debts owed, and money pre-existed that writing. You might even speculate that money had an oral tradition until it needed to invent a written tradition, so writing was created for it. In the history of money that now spans tens of thousands of years, there have been maybe 5 major changes. From pure barter exchange to the introduction of the first abstraction of value, shells, feathers, beads, nuts, stones, and then precious metals, and then paper money, and then plastic money, and now network money. Bitcoin introduces a platform on which you can run currency as an application on a network without any central points of control, a system completely decentralized like the internet itself. It is not money for the internet, but the internet of money. And what is money? Money is a language. Money is a linguistic abstraction. Money is a language that we use to communicate value to each other. Money simply allows us to express value, and that value may have economic consequences, but it also has other consequences. We use money to express and create social bonds and relationships and associations and to create organization. Bitcoin is the first system of money that is not controlled by any entity, that is completely decentralized. And what that does is it introduces the very same things that the internet brought to communication. If money is speech, if money is a language, and you disconnect it from all other media, and you make it pure speech, pure content, an internet content type, a protocol designation, money over IP, it completely separates it from all of these previous notions of nations, sovereign issuers, institutions that control. And so we go from institution-based money to network-based money. And of course, everyone will welcome this with open arms. Not a chance. What do you think they said the first time someone was presented with a gold depository certificate instead of a gold coin? They said, that's not money. Go away. What do you think happened in 1950, the first time someone showed up at a motel and presented their diner's club membership card and said, I'll pay with this piece of paper? That's not money. Go away. And now we're on the verge of a new transformation of money. We're on the verge of creating the first completely global, completely borderless, completely decentralized, and completely open form of money. One where you can build applications because this money is programmable. And you don't need to ask anyone's permission to launch an application any more than you need to ask permission to launch an application on the internet. And the only requirement to have a successful application on the internet of money is two interested participants. That is your market segment, and you have an application. And a million applications will flourish. When you push innovation to the edges of the network, when you remove the requirement for permission, what happens? Exponential explosion in innovation. The applications that could not be built on the old systems of money because they required permission, because they required a significantly large market segment, because they required adoption by many in order to be available at all. Now, none of those requirements exist. Anyone in the world can download an application or use even a feature phone with text messaging and immediately acquire the same powers that institutions of banking have today. And when I say anyone, that's only scratching the surface. Because ironically enough, not only does Bitcoin and blockchain currency not recognize borders, it also does not recognize people. It doesn't matter if you're a person, or a refrigerator, or a self-driving car. Throughout the history of money, ownership of currency required personhood, either as an individual or as an association of individuals in a corporation. Bitcoin can be owned by machines. Bitcoin can be owned by software agents. Machines can pay each other. And that is not just about economic activity. It's the basis for market-based security systems. It's the basis for creating bonds of authentication between devices. It's the basis of new applications that have never been done before. Bitcoin and blockchain technology unifies the systems of money. Today, we have systems of money for small payments, systems of money for large payments. We have systems of money for payments between individuals. We have systems of money for payments between companies. We have systems of money for payments between governments. Does that remind you of something? That's how communication used to be before the internet. We had systems of communication for pictures, systems of communication for letters, systems of communication for short distance and long distance, and the internet came and unified all of those. What the internet of money does is it creates a single network which can do a microtransaction to a giga transaction in seconds anywhere in the world for any participant without permission. But if you just look at the application of money, you're missing the point. Because you can take the language, the building blocks of this platform, and use them to construct other languages that communicate value. Tokens, reward points, brand loyalty coins. Today, there are over 1,000 digital currencies using the design pattern, the recipe of Bitcoin. Most of them are junk. Some of them are not. And over the next decade, we are going to see tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands of coins. Some will have economic use. Some will simply be expressions of loyalty, affiliation. They will represent items in the physical world, the title for a house, the controlling key for a car that can be transferred from one owner to another, and 5 seconds later, that owner can step into the car and drive away because the car can validate the new standard of ownership. We cannot yet imagine what applications we're going to build around this. But one of the interesting things we're beginning to observe is that money arises out of the social construct of Homo sapiens spontaneously. It even arises in primates. You can teach monkeys money. You can teach dolphins money. You can teach grays, parrots, money. And they will learn how to exchange abstract tokens for food and then use them to build social relationships. They'll also invent strong-arm robbery. Beat up the other monkey, take away its pebbles, eat the bananas. And we see that same thing happen in children. Toddlers invent money in kindergarten. Blocks and rubber bands and Pokemon cards and other little tokens, abstractions of value that they exchange to strengthen social bonds, to express loyalty and friendship, to learn about sharing. Children will be building currencies. Only this time, these currencies will be global, unforgeable, and scalable on day one. Few years from now, Maria will be launching Maria Coin in her kindergarten to compete against Joey Coin. And it won't really matter to anyone. Until, of course, Justin Bieber launches Justin Bieber Coin, and it happens to surpass the market capitalization of 30 nations on this planet. And we are all writing horrified opinion editorials about how the world is going to hell.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Unscripted. If you'd like to see more content like this, make sure to subscribe so you never miss a new release. You can also find a link to the original video presentation of this episode in the podcast description and be notified when new videos come out on YouTube. Just click the subscribe button. And now, back to the show.
What's happening with this technology is astonishingly deep. And for certainly some of the companies in this room, it's a bit scary. Banking has never been the most innovative sector in the world because there is a very careful balance between innovation and the conservative fiduciary duty that exists in banking, that must exist when you control other people's money. And yet with Bitcoin, you don't control other people's money. In Bitcoin, I control my money. I have complete and total authority over my Bitcoin. It cannot be seized. It cannot be frozen. It cannot be censored. My transactions cannot be intercepted, and they cannot be stopped. And I can do so with almost complete anonymity, and so can anyone 5 minutes after they download an application, and money has changed forever, and banking has changed forever. The idea that you can proceed in the industry of money, in the industries of commerce, and maintain the same conservative attitude that has existed now for centuries, ever since merchants in Venice and Amsterdam started issuing depository certificates and providing banking services. That is gone. That is gone. You cannot operate closed systems that have borders and require permission to join at a rate of innovation that is controlled by the most conservative tendencies within your organization, because now you are competing with a technology that enables exponential growth, exponential innovation at the edges without permission by anyone in the world. And it's not about anyone in this room. Why? We represent the privileged elite. I can go onto a brokerage account, open it up online, and be trading on the Tokyo stock market within 12 hours in yen. That is the privilege that I have. 1.5 billion people have that privilege. 6 billion people can operate mainly in one currency and perhaps have some basic banking services. 4 billion people are significantly underbanked, and an astonishing 2.5 billion people are completely unbanked. They will leapfrog. They will never have a relationship with a bank. Every single child born today will never have a bank account. They will have a bank app. A bank app that doesn't give them an account, a bank app that makes them a banker, an international banker in an app. They will not be permitted to open a bank account until they're 16 years old. By that time, I hope they will have at least 6 or more years of experience with digital currencies. And I would like to watch them walk into a bank branch to have someone explain to them what 3 to 5 business days means. It is highly likely that children born today will never get a driving license because they'll have self-driving cars, but they will also never use paper money. Because by the time they get to an age where they really start using money, there is no paper money. It will seem as anachronistic as a fax machine or horse and buggy seems to us. Exponential innovation on a global basis, giving access to the other 6 billion. They have enormous need, and this system offers them a solution. It's not ready yet. It's nascent. It's complex. It's impossible to use for most people. In 1989, I sent my first email. In order to do so, I had to compile a version of the Unix mail program using a C compiler and Unix command line skills. I had to set it up on the command line, type out my email, and that email was transmitted across the great internet in an astonishing 3 days. Exactly 20 years later, my mother replicated that experience with a swipe. Bitcoin today and all of the currencies that are built on that recipe are just at the same level that the internet was in 1991. Only now, we have the internet. And so the rate of exponential growth has already started. The innovation is growing at an astonishing rate. I spend every single day full time trying to keep up with Bitcoin, just one currency, and it's almost impossible. Do not underestimate this. Do not listen to the people who tell you that Bitcoin is just for pornographers, terrorists, drug dealers, and gamblers. Remember that they said the exact same thing about the internet. And when you give it to 2 or 3 billion people, they're not interested in those things. They're interested in sharing cat videos. And now we have an internet of 1 billion cat videos. When you take digital currency mainstream and give it to the 4 billion people who have been isolated from international finance and commerce, and you give them the opportunity to control their money against despotic governments and corrupt banks that are stealing from them, you give them the opportunity to control their future. You give them the opportunity to transact with everyone in the world, to own title on their own property in a fully transferable digital token that is recognized everywhere. Control over finance that cannot be seized, frozen, or censored. They will buy food, healthcare, sanitation, education, shelter, because that's what we do. And they will not be denied this technology. Do not underestimate where this is going. The Internet of Money was launched on January 3rd, 2009. It's coming. It's coming faster than you can imagine. It's deeper than you can fathom. It's more sophisticated than you can immediately understand. It takes years of study just to see all of the implications. And it is a gift to the entire world, a technology that represents the sixth greatest innovation in the technology of money, the most ancient technology of our civilization. Thank you.
If you're here, you've probably seen some of my work already and realized how much time, money, and effort goes into producing original content with an independent perspective. What you might not know is that almost all of the content I produce is both free and open source and will remain so forever. These audio podcasts are released under Creative Commons ShareAlike license, CC by SA. This means that you can share, copy, and redistribute the material in any medium or format, as well as adapt, remix, transform, and build upon the material for any purpose, even commercially, as long as you give appropriate credit and distribute your contributions under the same license. I believe that this technology can be a great equalizer, and that people all around the world can become empowered by learning about it. We can change our own communities and build new organizations that can benefit us all. If you share this vision and can afford to support it, then please do so by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/aantonop. If you'd like to know more about me, you can follow me on Twitter and visit my website at aantonop.com. That's aantonop.com. You can find the growing collection of books I've written on Bitcoin and open blockchains, Mastering Bitcoin, the Internet of Money series, and most recently Mastering Ethereum at /books. Visit /events to find out when I may be speaking live in a city near you. The narration for this episode was done by Stephanie Murphy. Production and show notes were organized by JR, with administrative support from Erica and production assistance from Jessica. The original video editing was done by Adrian Tano. Sound engineering by Brian Sovereign. The Unscripted logo was designed by Davi Barker, and the music used in both the video and audio versions of these talks is called Unbounded by Orphan. You can find him at facebook.com/ORFAN. I'm Andreas Antonopoulos, and this has been an episode of Unscripted. Thanks for listening.